Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. We have a special guest here today. We have Gigi from Pretty Lies and Alibis, and I'm telling you, you need to go listen to their podcast. It is great content. They are always two steps ahead of just about everybody else on information. So, Gigi, welcome to Crime Talk. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, Scott. It's we watched you before we even started this podcast. So this is a full circle moment for us. So thank you so much for the invite.
So you saw my podcast and you said, hey, if this idiot can do it, we can certainly do better, correct?
Oh no. This podcast was born really out of COVID boredom. We started in a back closet the day the kids were found, actually. We had, you know, kind of tossed the idea around for a few weeks. And then the day they announced that, when Nate came on and said, they're digging in the backyard, I said, it's now or never. And we started it that day with seven listeners and we haven't looked back. So it's been really fun.
Well, that's great. I mean, let's, you know, do this shameless self-promotion here. All right. Where can everyone go to download, listen to Pretty Lies and Alibis or watch on YouTube?
All over social media. So we're on Spreaker, we're on Apple Podcasts, Amazon, iHeartRadio, pretty much anywhere you can listen to a podcast. And then just under any social media, just look under Pretty Lies and Alibis and you'll see us.
Yeah. I mean, you guys are doing great. And I love your logo. Did you design that yourself? Or
we had somebody design it for us, but we're born in the 70s. So we were raised in the 80s. And I just wanted some kind of a flashy kind of 80s reminiscent logo. And this is what we got and we love it. So, and our listeners love it. We've got some t-shirts and stuff and we get a lot of messages, man, I just feel like I just, you know, stepped out of the 80s in this shirt. So that's what we wanted. Something fun.
Yeah, no, it looks great. Now, when you do your podcast, you have a partner in crime, Fruit Loop. Tell me a little bit about her. How do you all know each other? Like, and you said this started kind of out of boredom and then the Lori Vallow case. So just kind of tell me a little bit about that. Tell everyone about that.
Well, Fruit Loop and I went to high school together. And so we really started hanging out freshman year and just never looked back. I mean, we are total opposites and, but it works. I mean, it doesn't matter what we're doing. We literally laughed at a funeral one time together. We're just that kind of a friendship. And so she had never done legal. I did this years ago and took a little break because my kids were still small. And, but when the Vallow case came, I remember texting her and saying, hey, check out this missing kids case. Very weird. I think this is going to be huge. And so on our own for about a month, we were just kind of sleuthing all the key players online. And the more we found, the more we were intrigued. And then when it hit mainstream media, and when the bodies were found the day, we just said, let's do it. And, so I think it works. We have fun no matter what we do.
Well, that's great. And it's obvious, you know, from listening to, your podcast that you guys are great friends. It's like having a conversation, you know, sitting across the table. It's enjoyable. And I encourage everyone to, go listen. I appreciate the little shout out that you, gave me on yesterday's podcast.
Yeah, we shout out a lot, actually. We'll say, oh, well, we watched Scott and he said this, so this is how we look smart.
Well, I appreciate that. We try to get it right most of the time, but let the world know that you have, you and your podcast, Pretty Lies and Alibis, have been great as far as getting us information. Sometimes you're saying, where's this coming from? Is this reliable? And bam, it's been correct. So we appreciate you doing that. And the most recent thing you did was, I don't know if I can show this here in the screen. I think we have a picture of it, but this is, I know I killed a few trees here. Stack of documents on the Lori Vallow matter down there in Chandler, Arizona, that's been released. Not everything, and much of it has been redacted, but it's very insightful as it relates to the progression of the investigation in this particular case. And, well, why don't you tell me your thoughts about it?
Well, you know, like we said on the podcast yesterday, there wasn't anything in these documents that blew our mind. It wasn't like there was some information that we didn't know. But what I found with these documents is that it filled in a lot of gaps. And so where we knew one small piece, reading some of the emails back and forth, you get a much bigger picture. So that's helped us to sort of see how the investigation progressed from Kay originally reaching out about Charles's murder with concern for JJ and Tylee to the end of these documents where, you know, Alex is dead, the FBI is involved. So it was really interesting just to see how they kind of put the puzzle together to start figuring out this huge mess that Lori and Chad and Alex created.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a good example of, you know, oftentimes we don't get a lot of these internal emails unless we go and ask for them in a criminal case. You get the case reports and things like that. But I mean, this is like, you know, this is what the defense is going to get. And this doesn't include all the cell phone. So if you imagine if you printed all this out, this would be a full-time job in and of itself.
Yes.
So whomever represents Lori down in Arizona, but this has more than likely all been produced in the case in Idaho for Chad and Lori. So it would be a full-time job and you have to go through and confirm, is this accurate? Is it not? Send investigators out, go interview people. It just, you know, surprising to me that the retainer that was retained would be sufficient enough to do this. This would be a full-time job for a team of investigators and a team of attorneys.
Yeah.
To leave no stone unturned.
Not to mention everything that the attorneys in Idaho are having to get, you know, as part of the case there. So this is just a snippet. And that's what we said is as cumbersome as this file is, you can't imagine how many terabytes this is, you know, and now you see maybe why it takes a while to get discovery back and forth. It's massive.
It is massive. And, you know, it does, everybody thinks, oh, well, you know, where is it? And sometimes I've been known to say, oh, you know, you filed the case, where is it? There's certain aspect of a criminal case. It's like, give me the discovery. You know, I need to get going. But yeah, when it's this massive and they have to deal with multiple agencies, it's tough. And like, for example, in Idaho, it's like, these police officers don't report to anybody in Idaho. So is it really discoverable? Well, probably not, but more than likely the prosecution is going to turn it over just in case if they had it, or, you know, there's emails referencing it. So it's really, really good. All right. So you've had a chance to go through all of these documents so far. How much time have you spent going through these documents?
Oh man, we got them probably early last week. It's taken me 12 to 14 hours a day to sit here, mainly because what I'm doing is going through and finding anything that's relevant, which in that stack, it's a really small amount compared to what I'm going through. But I've just tried to take screenshots of the things because I don't want to put anybody's addresses or numbers out there that are investigating this case. You saw that there, you know, they have a lot of people that call in tips and it's a hunch and it's, I heard this on a Facebook group or whatever. And so just trying to be careful, it's taken a lot longer. And I'm honestly maybe a quarter of the way through at this point. I've skimmed through just to make sure I'm getting all the good stuff, but I'll be here till probably Jesus comes back going through these documents.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff and I've started it and, you know, there's been a couple of things that jumped out. One of the early emails that was from Kay Woodcock, who's one of the investigators down there. And the email were, this is back in October 28th. And she's writing, says, "Hey, Chad DeBell, cult leader, whom Charles suspected Lori was having an affair. Just so happens his wife passed away in her sleep on 10/19/19, Salem, Idaho. I'll send you her obit." How odd is that? Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark. I wonder if she was heavily insured. I mean, these are the kinds of things that, I mean, it kind of shows how cynical the world has become.
Yes.
But they already knew at that point kind of the characters that they were dealing with in this case, and rightfully so. And coincidentally, there was some insurance, was there not?
Yeah. Everybody. Yeah. I mean, spouse wise, you had the attempt on Brandon. We know he had $1 million policy. Charles, thank goodness he was wise to this way before they murdered him and changed the beneficiary to Kay. And then you find out Tammy, I think that was the only life insurance policy that was actually paid out, and that went to Chad, and that was actually the smaller one. It was what, $430,000, I believe.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, you see very early on that even Kay is putting all these pieces together, and I think she single-handedly helped law enforcement sort of get a bigger picture, you know, very early on, which helped them to figure out which direction to start looking.
Yeah, no, it's rather interesting. I think she was also mentioned in one of the emails where they're like, hey, we have Tylee's Facebook page, and there were people on it after the incident, so to speak. They're like, yeah, can't be her, but has her in various different locations.
Yeah.
Which I've talked about on my show. It's like, they may have all this information, but the question is it admissible? How are they going to prove it? Get it in? Because yeah, they just can't say, here, jury, here's all these documents. You go figure it out yourself. They have to do it, and they got to get the right witnesses and be able to authenticate that, well, it's her Facebook account, but if Tylee was no longer with us, who was on it? Who was?
Yeah. Let's try to figure that out.
Lots and lots of issues for trial.
Mm-hmm.
So,
just in your opinion, do you think it's going to be a year or more before we see Chad or Lori in court for the murder charges?
I mean, normally, you know, and Chad's already entered a plea of not guilty. They have a trial date set. They have 6 months from the date that they say not guilty to get him to trial.
Gotcha.
Not that I have access to everything, but if I was the attorney, I'd be saying, let's go. The prosecutor has to sort, analyze, organize this in a simple fashion to make sense to a jury. And he's only got, you know, another 4 months to go, I think. I think the trial was set in December, if I remember correctly.
I think November, December. Yeah. That's a good point though. You know, you kind of get them off guard, get them when they're not ready. That makes a lot of sense. I've been dying to ask you that. So.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of times people think delay is the best tactic. Well, maybe if you think the prosecution's ready to go, but nobody thinks you'll ever go in a first setting. Right. And I had a big document dump on a big homicide a couple of years ago, and they're like, well, you're going to ask for a continuance, right? I mean, no. I've been here about 18 hours a day all weekend. I'll be ready to go on Monday. Let's do it.
Wow.
And it was a not guilty. So, you know, they tried to work in a continuance on that. But yeah, if I was prior, I'd be like, see you on trial date. Let's do this thing.
Interesting.
Not going to change anything at all for them.
No.
So like, let's go.
Inevitable.
You know, and you can blame it all on Lori Vallow.
Right. Which I think is what's going to happen.
There's no doubt in my mind.
Although we've been told they're very much still united. As far as we know, there's been no break between the two of them. So we shall see.
Well, let me ask you this, because you guys always have the good scoop. Any word on her visit down to the state hospital? Do you have anything breaking? Not a thing?
Look at that smile. I haven't heard about it.
Okay.
It's interesting though, because we've been told that Mark Means has been at the women's detention center pretty much every day, even if she's in the mental hospital, he's still there. And we looked and didn't see that he had any other clients in that facility. I don't know where he would have time, but as far as we know, even if she is still in the mental hospital, which 90 days she should be, he's still there every day or nearly every day.
Which is beyond bizarre to me. Yeah. Really, it is
4 hours away. I just wonder at this point, he has to have somewhere there he's renting, or because it's 4 hours there and back. I don't see him doing an 8-hour commute every day. It's very interesting stuff.
Yeah, that I think that's going to be a story in and of itself. We've all had cases that interest us, you know, like, oh, this is a great one.
Yes,
but I mean, he's going to have to justify his bill to the judge or whomever with the state now, and you hanging out at the jail because this is, you know, maybe your only client as you got right now. I think that may be hard to believe. And, you know, we went through was it our Patreon show? I can't remember. Patreon or our live Tuesday night, about somebody asked, what are the qualifications if this case were a death penalty case? He doesn't meet the requirements. He doesn't meet the requirements of a regular case. So, I mean, not trying to throw stones, but I'm just saying the ABA has guidelines that the state of Idaho has adopted for him. And for attorneys doing death penalty and homicide cases, they want you to have a couple under your belt before you go solo, single chair. So this is not a case you can do on your own.
Right. And this case is so massive worldwide that that adds to the fact that this is honestly the craziest case I've ever covered in the years I've done this for a million reasons. But yeah, you really do think, I mean, how there's no way with how big this is. And if they seek death, I thought we had already passed that deadline of where Rob Wood had to.
I think it's actually coming up in 2 days.
Okay, thank you. Awesome. So maybe the beginning of next week we'll know, which I mean, yeah, I kind of hope he does. It's a bargaining chip to get him to just avoid trial, but I don't know.
I don't think they're gonna go death. I mean, I think really? If you look, I mean, obviously you certainly have a number of bodies stacking up, but you know, it's not like he was a career criminal, but you know, you certainly get into the weird factor, but I don't know if it's death stuff. I mean, if I was the prosecutor, I'd just be like, let's go with what we got. Let the chips fall where they may. So in this big stack of documents that we have on the Lori Vallow matter in Chandler, what other documents jump out to you thus far that you'd like to share with us?
I think one of the big ones for me is the communication that Charles made with Lori. And this is during the time where she disappeared for like 50 days or something. So this was sort of day 39, I believe, because he named how many days she'd been gone. And so this wasn't anything that was fact-driven in the case that answered any questions, but I think it showed he was taking care of JJ alone in Texas. And he's telling her, we just had a bath. He got a big boy haircut, is as cute as he is. And what really stuck out to me is that is the most normal I've ever seen anything associated with JJ this whole time. And you have to consider, Charles is not a spring chicken. He's in his 60s, and he is being a single parent to an autistic child for a bunch of days. And all I saw was love for JJ, concern for Lori. And what really struck me is just, I wish she had never come back to Texas to reconcile for that brief amount of time, because maybe she would have just went away and JJ and Charles could have just had their own little life. So for me, that was the biggest thing so far, and I'm not even close, but it renewed that heartbreak for me that Charles really did try everything. And obviously with where her brain was at the time, it was never going to be good enough. But that really spoke to me. And then I think too, there were some other things when we found out Alex is transferring money. There were 3 transfers to somebody in Colombia, South America. I'm very curious to see what that was. We know what Alex was involved with. You know, he would go solicit people and that kind of thing. I'm just curious what that money was for. There's a lot of questions, though. Everything pretty much about Zulema was redacted. And so I think she is the star witness in this case. I used to think Melanie Gibb, but I don't think so anymore. I think Zulema holds a lot of answers that only she can give.
I do not disagree with you at all. I think you're absolutely correct in that, because like I said, there's a lot of redactions in there when her statements and conversations come up, what have you. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. The money to South America, little odd. I've heard lots of kind of different theories about that, but so far it's just speculation at this point.
Well, there was a document in there where somebody who he's not involved with law enforcement. It was a message that was relayed to law enforcement through somebody else. And he says, oh, they had this really elaborate meth drug trafficking ring to pay for legal fees and all this stuff. And so I put it out there because it was in the documents. And then our readers are like, oh, my gosh, they were involved in meth. And I'm like, whoa, guys, no. That did not come from us. That was in the pack. So I think with what we know, as shocking as it is, once all this is tucked away and maybe we get a lot more of the documents, I think we're going to be just blown away at what these people did to accomplish what. You've got dead children, dead spouses, no life insurance money. And yesterday I tweeted out the AC/DC song, Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap. And I said, they didn't get Charles's life insurance policy. They didn't get Brandon's. So essentially they did all this. It was dirty deeds done dirt cheap.
For nothing.
For nothing. Nothing at all.
That used to be back in the day when people had, your cell phone would ring. That was my cell phone. Yeah, that it is interesting. Like, was it all worth it? Like, was, I mean, I've joked about this. Like, do you think Chad DeBell, and he never really tried to get out of custody. I think it's, he thinks in the back of his mind, I'm probably safer in here because everyone around Lori Vallow seems to wind up deceased.
Yes.
He's got to be a little concerned.
Yeah. I mean, look, we know a lot of the family back when Lori was running around and they didn't know where she was. We know Adam and Zach Cox were both terrified. We know JJ School was terrified at when all this came out. So you see how people knew she was very unpredictable. At that point, Charles had been murdered. She lied to the school and said he passed away. And then they Google searched and found out he's murdered. So I think it speaks volumes. And you're right. I mean, everybody who Lori was done with, when they had done whatever in her life she needed them to do, they ended up dead. Look at Joe Ryan. Even though they say it's natural, I've said, even if she didn't physically kill him, she killed that man. Look for years he just tried to see his daughter.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, natural causes, right? Well, so was Tammy DeBell.
Right.
We don't know exactly what the cause of death is now, but it should be released. I would think one of these days we're going to get that autopsy or it's going to come out at a hearing or something.
Yeah. I hope so. I'm very curious.
Yeah, there's just too many coincidences where so Definitely. Many people pass away. And there's always been some sort of, like I said, this familial conflict that's going on with everybody. It's just, I mean, yeah. She is one of those people, and we all know him, that everything is a drama, you know?
Oh, yeah, thrives on chaos.
It's just, she has to have that drama conflict in her life, complete mm-hmm. chaos, kind of the new sparkly object, you know, over here. Okay, well, that's a little dull and mundane. I guess I'll go find something new. Oh, you just happen to have a cult and a wife? No worries, we'll get rid of her, you know?
Yeah, and you're an author, you know, yeah.
Yeah, it just, like I said, it's never good enough. Always looking for something better. The next shiny little object.
Exactly, going on. It's true. But and I always felt so bad for Tylee, because if you look starting way back when she's a baby, Lori started all of the custody drama with Joe Ryan, and Tylee's just in the middle. And so obviously I didn't know them, but I don't see many times in that child's life where it wasn't controlled by her mother's chaos. It's just, you feel so bad. She never got to get away from that and deal with that as a woman and be your own person. And it's just, it's also heartbreaking, but I don't see where that kid had a normal life from infancy on.
It's unfortunate, because like you said, there's all this drama, and she, you know, kids see that stuff. They know. And I doubt that Lori Vallow was the kind of say, oh, I'm not going to argue or mention this in front you know, Tylee in any way. You know what I mean? I'm sure she heard about it, knew about it every day. And it was a back and forth. And when she went over to see dad, it was probably, oh, your mother. You know, I mean, yeah.
I mean, it's a fight, but there was a little thing, and I glanced at it, but there was something in the documents. I will have to find it and post it, where at one point it seems like Tylee admits that she lied for her mother during this Joe Ryan custody dispute. There was something in there. And I just remembered that I didn't go back and post that, but, and all the experts, we talked to, her social worker, Tom Ware. He reached out to us and wanted to give his side of the story, because everybody online was saying, oh, well, he was going to change his testimony if he could stay on the case and that sort of thing. And then you talk to Tom Ware and you find out that he was so concerned about Tylee that there was just a lot of things that he tried to do that it fell on deaf ears. And so a lot of people have been affected by this case. It's just people that dealt with this situation down in Texas, for them, Tom and Vivian, his partner, they did not know this was going on until this year.
Really?
Yeah, because he doesn't really get online much. He doesn't watch the news. Both of them did not know what was going on, I believe, until about January of this year. But you look then, there's just so many victims of Lori that are living, family, people that were invested in Tylee's future in the courts. And, you know, just that's the one thing we talk about, is you have the victims that are no longer with us, but so many living victims in this case that will have to deal with this for the rest of their life.
And I think I remember seeing some documents that had been filed in the custody dispute about Tom Ware. If I remember, he was the one saying, hey, there's no truth to this. There's manipulation taking place.
Right.
And, it puts everybody in a tough spot.
Right.
As it relates to that. So that's interesting. I haven't got to that document. Like I said,
it's huge. I'll send you the file if you want, but,
it's a big
thing is, you know, online too, when certain things get out and not the full story, because I said some things that were not so kind about Tom Ware when all we had was this little snippet of information, but then you talk to him and you see what he really tried to do, according to him, to get Tylee away. And it was recommended at one point that Joe have Tylee by the court professionals. And so, you know, that's the thing we try to be careful of too, is not to put something out there that we're not sure of. And that was a lesson for me in that I kind of said some not so nice things. And then he calls us up and he says, I'd like to talk to you. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I called you an idiot. My bad.
No, you know, the tough thing about anything you say out there about other people is you got to be,
make sure you're saying what's, I think that what was available to the public at that time, it was a fair assumption, but once we read the documents and talked to him, it was completely different. And, you know, I mean, Lori from day one, he just said, this woman is not right. She's evil. She's using this kid for her own well-being. And, you know, again, he was right about a lot of things, even in the report, looking all these years later, he pegged her.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, and because it seems like Lori bounces around, she doesn't really have these deep relationships, at least from what we can tell, kind of very peripheral. But the people that do know her are like afraid of her and said she's an evil person. So apparently once you know the true Lori Vallow, you get a little concern for your safety.
Right. But one person that knew her described to us that she would love bomb you. So she would make you feel like the most important person in a room. So there was always this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing with her, where even in the beginning, Kay said she was a great mother. She took care of these kids on the surface and to everybody else. She put out what she wanted the world to see, but she was very good at manipulating people into thinking she was just this great person. And now we know that not to be true, but I mean, she even had JJ's grandparents fooled.
Yeah. Well, that's a classic sign of, I don't want to say true sociopath, but of a con man, con person,
right,
con woman, because they shower everyone with affection and attention and they're going to take care of you. What can we do with you? And then they get that trust and then it's, oh, can I have this? And they just kind of they use from that point on. But that's usually the first initial starting point is, oh, you're a great guy. Let me buy you lunch. Let me do this. Well, and you know, help you out. And like you said, that image, this is the way it looks on for the rest of the world, perfect family, the perfect mom. She's doing everything great. And when in reality, it's not exactly the case.
It's just fake, but it got her far because the one thing I wish was not redacted. And if I tell you I did not try to lighten the redactions, I'm lying, is the assessment that was done in Arizona at her psychological assessment. That is in there. It's all blacked out. But I'm going to tell you, I was in PicMonkey sliding, exposure, reading it, like printing it out, putting it up to the sun. I tried everything.
You want to know a legal trick? It's very, you have to, practice for many, many years to do this. But sometimes if you take it and you hold it up to a window,
I went out in the sun. I did with the printed copy and I was pointing towards the big sun.
Don't want me to see in here. I'll show you. Yeah. You try that.
But that would be interesting to see because I think Lori is such a dangerous person that she could probably pass a lie detector test. She could probably fool, very seasoned mental health professionals. Curious to see what's going on now in that mental hospital. And maybe one day at trial we'll find out. But, people are on to her now.
Yeah, we will have to see because when they raise the whole competency issue, color me skeptical. I'm like, really? But then the prosecution said, hey, we had our expert look at the reports and we're not contesting it. Like, very interesting. But down at the mental health facility, she is going to be watched literally 24/7. And when she thinks that she's not being watched, she will be. And all those people that work there, whether it's doctors, nurses, interns, they're all taking copious notes as to what she's doing. So if she is faking it, malingering, they'll catch her. They will catch her. We'll see. And you know, who knows? It wouldn't surprise me if she has some serious mental health issues.
Clearly.
And I'm no doctor, but I've had similarly situated clients, and they came back with various delusional type disorders where they just have no concept of reality.
Well, I think if you look through some of these, some of the things that we have seen, the emails and the texts that have been released, I mean, she's evil. Yes. Do I think that she really bought into this religion stuff? I do. Mm-hmm. Personally, I just, because she, you know, when she's texting amongst the group, it's all, oh, you know, it's, she's convinced. I think, do I think she's evil? Yes. Do I think she knew what she was doing? Of course. It doesn't mean she still can't have some stuff, you know, wrong with her noggin. She does. You can't do what she did and be emotionally healthy.
Yeah. And people can actually, like I said, be okay and then just fall straight into it. You know, there's that old saying that, you know, the converts are the most devout. And if you think about it, you know, people, oh, I converted this. Let me tell you all about it, what have you. And she converted kind of to this theory that the world was coming to an end with Chad and what have you, jumped in both feet. And like I said, just believed it all. And she had good reason to believe it because she thought that she was going to be the high princess, so to speak.
Well, she was the niece of Jesus, I think. So, I mean, come on.
who wouldn't want things to come forward, you know, go well, right? I mean,
right. But,
you know, it's like, I will just leave it there. I don't know.
It's all so bizarre. I have somebody I know, and we do a series on our podcast when we're kind of short on news. It's called A Glimpse at Life. And it's somebody who, that I grew up with that is in prison for life for not murder. I mean, she was charged with murder, but it's one of those, if you help afterwards or something, you get the same charge if you kind of knew what was happening before. And she's given me a lot of insight into the mental health aspect. And she always says after about a year for new people, this happened to her and she's seen it time and time again. After about a year in the pokey, reality kind of sets in that this is your future. And they have that psychotic break. Just maybe she hasn't come to her senses and realized the world didn't end. I can't visit Chad from my portal and all this stuff, but still the reality of I'm behind bars. I've been behind bars since February of 2020. So in her mind, she thought maybe the incompetency was more just, oh my gosh, like my future is over. I got caught for the first time in her life. This is the first time she has ever had to face any kind of consequence for her shenanigans.
Yep.
And that's a hard pill to swallow when you've consistently gotten away with all these evil deeds for years and years and years. Now it's caught up. She's not wiggling out.
What do you mean you can't believe me? And, you know, a little bat of the eyelash, and flick of the hair, and, just, it's always looked before and now it isn't. What is wrong?
Yeah, do that high pitch, innocent voice. And so, it's just the other thing I wanted to make fun of a little bit, because I try not to make fun, but is the glow in the dark malachite rings that she bought on Etsy.
Yes.
Can you imagine telling people, hey, I want you to see my wedding ring. Let's go in the bathroom and shut the light out.
Why don't you tell everybody about that? Because I think they ordered on Etsy, right? And the guy that made them, you know, probably be booming with business right now, I guess.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. So apparently she had ordered these. These was after just maybe not even a month after Charles was murdered. Mm-hmm. And right before Tylee was murdered, she ordered this glow in the dark malachite ring. It was almost $260, I believe. And it was glow in the dark. And so I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, gosh, you know, glow in the dark malachite ring. I mean, all she needs is an 80s slap bracelet that glows in the dark. And like her whole 80s wardrobe is complete. But yeah, so the guy could not fulfill the orders. He's a student and school was just too much. So that order was canceled. And then that's how she went on to Amazon, which ultimately, if you start looking through these documents, around the time where they're putting pieces together, that's when Kay says, hey, I found all this wedding stuff on Amazon. something's up. Yeah. So it's kind of like it was meant to be that that purchase didn't go through, because otherwise Kay would not have seen. At that point, unfortunately, the kids were deceased. They were murdered. But, you know, it put law enforcement on it. I think that when those emails were discovered by Kay and they see them holding hands a few days after Tammy's death, it starts to become a picture.
It becomes much more clear. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Now, we've talked about Lori, but, you know, another person that really had some signs of he's a scary person was Alex Cox.
Oh, my gosh. I mean,
some of the stuff in there about him harming animals and things like that. I mean, all the signs were there, but
yeah,
they were. Charles tried to get Lori into the, you know, for the mental health evaluation. They sent her home. I mean, everybody kept saying, there's something wrong here. There's something wrong here. And if somebody had listened, you know, we would not be here talking today, you and I.
Very true. And I would prefer that, you know, yeah, Alex he was a weird guy, and I don't know enough in depth about him, but he really, and I liken it to a video game character. It's like he's the guy on screen, and Lori was the person with the remote control, making him go left, making him go right. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, takes away his culpability. You can't, you know, you can lead a horse to water. He chose to do her bidding, but it's very odd how a person would let anybody manipulate them to commit multiple murders. I mean, we're in serial killer territory now.
Yeah. And he's had a history of, you know, doing things to animals and things like that.
Yeah, that's sick. And like, that's always a red flag when, like yeah. they say, when kids start hurting animals, this is a grown man. So it just shows there's no regard for any kind of creature, human or animal, that's living and breathing. If it's not needed at that point, because two of the dogs he left in the desert were Lori's, much like everybody else in her life, kind of poetic. The dogs get dumped in the desert and left to die.
No longer needed.
She was done.
Yep. Moving on to the next chapter. That's it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, hey, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk.
Oh my gosh. I've had so much fun. You don't know. I was literally shaking right before we went on, but we had a little chat. I feel great. And we just really appreciate you. And this was a blast. Hopefully we can do it again at some point.
Yeah, let's do it again soon. And, you know, everybody out there, once again, Pretty Lies and Alibis, they're on YouTube. But your podcast is where it seems like you guys are crushing it right now. And you're found basically everywhere on all the podcast downloads. Is that right?
We are. And we're, we've got some, we just had Crusha, Kate Easton, which is JJ's aunt and Charles's niece on last week. So we're going to start doing some more lives. We're mixing it up a little bit. We got some big things in store, but for right now, our focus will always be on that podcast for our listeners. Sure. And yeah, so we're excited to see what the future brings and just hopefully kind of get a front row seat to justice being served for this murderous bunch. It's an interesting case, and we appreciate everything you've done for us as well. You've been a huge help, even if you don't know it, because I will hop on your channel if I have a question and usually find the answer. So what you do is amazing. And I know all of our listeners listen to you.
Well, so. I mean, you're too kind. But I mean, seriously, I want to thank you, because I probably wouldn't have this big stack of information if it weren't for you. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And this is what I'm going to be spending my time on. So
there you go. Happy reading. I'll see you in a year. It'll
be great. Yeah, we'll get together and talk about it all over again and see if there was anything smoking gun released in here. So
there you go.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Gigi. Thanks
so much, Scott.
Thank you.